It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Lee Henriksen. Welcome, Lee.
Morning, Mike.
And on the phone, two phones, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hey, Mike and Lee.
And also down from KTNA, calling all that way, Philip Manning. Welcome, Philip.
Pleasure to be here, Mike.
This is going to be pretty much dedicated, although we may have room for a few other things, to reflections upon what happened during the earthquake. We have so many places to start, but what I'd really like to do is begin with Philip, because you were at the greatest distance from the epicenter of the earthquake, and yet the reverberations, I'm sure, were felt. How would you summarize what was happening up there in Talkeetna area?
Well, yeah, you're right. We very definitely felt it pretty strongly up here. We're fortunate in this area that damage was very limited. Most people I've talked to, just a case of pictures falling off walls, things falling off shelves. A lot of people are going to be asking for new dishes for Christmas. But outside of that, not a lot of significant damage that I've been made aware of, but it was definitely a very scary experience for us up here. I was actually getting ready to come into the office when it hit, and I think, like a lot of people, had that moment of like, okay, is this the big one, in air quotes? But we came out largely. I haven't heard of any injuries up here in this area, so we got off pretty lightly considering some of the damage that happened in other parts of the state.
Philip, you've been here for a while. How would you compare this earthquake with others that you've experienced?
Terrifying. So I moved up here about 7 years ago, and that's the strongest one I felt. That the Denali quake, which was felt very strongly in this area, was well before my time moving up here, and it was started off with kind of the low shaking and rumbling, and you could tell it was an earthquake and not a freight train going by. But then all of a sudden, things got a lot more violent, and it felt like a lot more side to side shaking than I'm accustomed to feeling in some of the earthquakes up here. But other than that one, I think the strongest one I'd felt here was a 6.4 a few years ago, so many times weaker than this one, and lasted about as long.
Now, as we work our way down toward the epicenter, Zaz, where were you at 8:29 a.m.?
I was getting my 9-year-old daughter ready to get on the school bus. And so we were in the entryway about to head out the door. So stood in the doorway, and, Philip described it well. At first it was, okay, this is an earthquake. And then pretty quick it was like, uh-oh, this is a big earthquake. And my daughter started to cry, and we just stood in the doorway, and I held on to her and told her it was going to be okay. And then we went out to the car just to get out of the house and took the dog with us. And that's when the 5.8 hit, and all of a sudden, the tsunami warning flashed on my phone, and so it was clear immediately that this was a big deal, my daughter didn't go to school, and then my older daughter was already at Colony Middle School, and so she called on a friend's phone, and she was frightened and said, "We're all outside, and everybody's calling their parents to come pick us up. Can you come pick me up, please?"
Right.
It was pretty harrowing.
Where were you actually located?
On Palmer Fishhook Road, about 6 miles up Palmer Fishhook Road, near Turner's Corner, so where the two fishhooks come together.
Okay. Well, Lee and I were both at that time here at the studio. She was outside. I was in the studio.
Yeah, so when the earthquake started for me, I ducked under our very sturdy table, because that's what I understand you do with earthquakes. You just get under something you're protected from falling things. And basically, I just sort of sat there and enjoyed the ride, which is kind of a bizarre thing. But that's how I felt. I will say that I was in California in 1989 in the Bay Area for the Loma Prieta quake. And I had a second floor apartment, so I had a whole lot of shaking and things did fall. That was a 6.9 earthquake, 6.9 magnitude. So a little more, about almost the same severity, more death there, partly because the freeway collapsed.
Right, right. Well, I, of course, was in the studio, and I was talking with Joseph Davis, who was up there in Glacier View, and I asked him whether there was shaking up there, and he said yes, and in fact, what he noted, and this is 50 miles up the highway, that he was looking across at a mountain that was dropping a landslide of rocks during that time. So, okay, we've described where we are, and that were at that particular time. The next question was, for our purposes, how did you find out what really happened? Philip, what were your sources of information up there in Talkeetna?
So, you know, as Oz mentioned, we all got that tsunami warning, and so that's when I realized that, okay, this was a big one, and it was probably somewhere near the coast if they're issuing that. So, you know, I'm on my phone frantically pulling up USGS and the Alaska Earthquake Center while getting ready for work. Ended up almost walking out of the house in my pajama pants. However, my girlfriend stopped me from doing that. But made it, and I live very close to the radio station, so literally ran to work. And early on, it's, you know, the only real information that you're going to get within the first few minutes is going to be, you know, whatever the preliminary results from USGS are. And then I pulled up social media and was seeing, you know, are people reporting damage, that sort of thing, while I was, you know, while at the same time assessing the station here to make sure that, you know, one, we were still on the air, which we were, both our transmitter and our station were fine, and making sure that, you know, there was no structural damage and nothing was broken here in the building, which fortunately doesn't seem to be the case. But yeah, early on, it was kind of word of mouth, and then once we got, you know, the initial information, I went downtown and started trying to get some firsthand information on what things looked like up here.
Zas, in the first hour or two of this event, what were your sources?
Sort of a personal aside, this was the first time for various reasons that I had to grapple with the conflict of being a parent and a reporter during a major disaster. As soon as it was clear that this was a big earthquake, I had a message from my editor saying, how quickly can you get something online? And I said, I can't. I have to console my daughter, which took about 10 minutes. I was shaking, and she was sobbing, and I wasn't going to work right then. And so other reporters did what Philip did and what we all do in these situations, you know, go to the Alaska Earthquake Center, go to USGS, go to the National Tsunami Warning Center, and start getting preliminary magnitudes so we can start assigning some early numbers to what we all felt. Mm-hmm. So within about 20 minutes after, by about 9, I was rolling and, you know, starting to write, you know, what was going on and trying to focus on what was happening here in Mat-Su. And frankly, it was a challenge. You know, the normal avenues for information in a disaster, you know, normally I would go to the borough, the Mat-Su borough, and normally their public information point person is Patty Sullivan. Patty was told not to work this earthquake. And so I texted her first, and she said, I'm not the PIO. I don't know that there was a PIO established. It was very soon after the earthquake. And so I texted another high-level emergency official. Sounds like maybe his phone wasn't working, so I didn't get through to him. And then called the borough manager, John Moosey, and didn't hear back. And so it wasn't until 10:15 that the borough posted the first update as to, you know, an early look at Vine Road, you know, the areas that we knew almost immediately were damaged. And so in that interim, I was trying to get information to my bosses about Mat-Su, and so I called the mayors of Palmer and Wasilla, where there wasn't a huge amount of damage. I was starting to get information about, you know, the Parks Glen interchange, the Vine Road, and then I turned on my emergency scanner and listened to calls. It was frustrating, frankly, because normally the system that is in place to get information to the media, which is getting information to the public, is stronger. So it took a while to kind of get the public information machine up and running. As I understand it, their emergency response machine went right into action. But there was a lag time between that and sort of translating it to the media. And then the public was frustrated that there wasn't more information about Mat-Su.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, here at the radio station, we started reporting about 9. Mike was taking call-ins on the air, and I started looking on Facebook. That was my main source of information. I was like up looking at the MEA Facebook page because there was a lot of electric outages.
And
NSTAR, and I found it was like, all right, MEA, NSTAR, DOT, Alaska Department of Administration. It's like the list of entities I was trying to get information from was pretty long, and trying to consolidate it and offer it on the air.
Yeah, so, and I have to say that in comparison, you know, because I cover breaking news, I'm also on any number of alerts from Anchorage, that Anchorage's emergency departments and APD were providing fairly quickly, were up and sending out alert messages as to, you know, what was going on, especially with the highway. It was clear very early on that the Glen Highway was a major source of damage.
Right. Yeah, I joined at Nixle morning.
So maybe that's a point that be made. We had 3 people, fortunately, working here in the studio. Lee was here. Carrie Bowling came right on down. I was here. And we were on the air for a couple of hours. And fortunately, because the internet was up, we had the ability to have our phones in work. We have landlines here in the studio. We found that we were getting a lot of calls in. There were people over at Finger Lake. There was even someone who had texted us from Anchorage that was listening to the stream of our station. It appears that, as I understood, when the quake happened, KSKA lost its transmitter tower capability.
Lost access, yeah.
And as a result, they went off the air. And I had half a dozen people tell me later on that they spun the dial. They found that we were on, and more importantly, that we were able, in those first few hours in particular, to give information about what was happening by just having 3 people working all those sources. But the greatest, I think, concern, in part, was about schools, and it was clear that the Mat-Su Borough School District had its stuff together, and they were clearly telling parents what the situation was. And the other piece was, what about the highway going into Anchorage or coming out of Anchorage? And Nixle, and I second what Lee had to say, watching what was being told at the EOC in Anchorage was very, very helpful in determining this whole business. So that worked pretty well. So, Philip, now that some time had passed and you've had, you know, past the day of Friday and on, were there any other more long-term reflections about the earthquake and or preparedness for earthquakes, or whether it's in your station or in the Talkeetna area?
Yeah, I know. I thought about it, and I suspect a lot of other people do. As the day kind of went on, we had our reporter Katie Ryder came in. She wasn't planned to be in that day, but happened to be in town and available, so came in and started going around and talking to people and getting some of those experiences. We weren't able to go continuously live just because at that point in the morning, I was the only person available to be in the studio giving those continuous live updates. We had the rest of the staff, you know, making phone calls, that sort of thing, calling the schools directly. And with regard to the school district, they did get a lot of information out quickly as far as, you know, damage and that sort of thing. One thing that I did hear some consternation about from parents was, you know, they sent out the notice that the buses wouldn't be running and that parents needed to come pick up their kids, but there wasn't really a reason why that was happening specified.
Right.
And we ended up getting that information by talking directly to some folks at the schools, and the reasoning made sense. They wanted to make sure that kids were not getting dropped off at a place where there was nobody there, nobody had checked, you know, the gas line and that sort of thing. So the reasoning made sense, but in the moment we didn't get that sort of information. And then as the day went on, you know, new concerns started to come up. We heard that there was a boil water notice in Anchorage. Well, Talkeetna's got a water system. And so we were getting calls here at the station saying, hey, do we need to boil our water? And so I actually, at that point, gosh, this probably would have been 11:30, I was able to get in touch with Terry Dolan, the public works director. And then from then on, I was able to consistently get information from him regarding both the water system and specifically the Talkeetna water system, as well as, you know, some of the roads. The other person early in the day that I was getting a lot of information from was our fire chief up here, Eric Chappell. He and his crew went out and were looking at roads. And one other thing that came up as the day wore on was that there might be issues with the 911 system being overloaded, or for whatever reason potentially having issues. The chief said he tried to call multiple times and wasn't getting through. So what they did is they staffed all the fire stations up here with emergency responders, because it was possible that folks might not be able to get through to 911. Now, as it turned out, they ended up not having any emergency calls that day up here, but had things been differently, it could have been a much different situation as far as the capability for people to get a hold of emergency responders.
I'm curious about the water situation in Talkeetna. Did any of the wells have any problems in that area?
The Talkeetna water system doesn't seem to have had any issues as a result of the earthquake. A lot of folks, as I'm sure they do all over the valley, had brownish-red water coming out of their wells for a little while and had to kind of run that out. But I haven't heard of any significant failures as a result of the earthquake.
Right, yeah. Whereas Anchorage, it was just a cautionary notice because of the line breaks. They were afraid of contamination, and since they couldn't verify it, they were being very cautious until they could make sure.
So, Zaz, I know, well, there are two parts to the question, of course. Let's start with the well issue, whether there's any problems that you have noted with waters coming from wells.
Well, I checked with DEC after the quake and the major water testing lab here in the valley. And also said we're not getting a lot of reports about, you know, well failures or contamination. My own circle of friends, I have one friend whose water is a gray, a dark gray. Up on Lazy Mountain sounds like there are a couple wells just in my very limited circle of friends. My own well has tested positive for total coliform. So we are bleaching, we're shocking it and flushing it. And it's still very, very cloudy. But hopefully that'll settle out as these aftershocks. I mean, there have been, at this point, almost 3,000 aftershocks since the main quake occurred at 8:30-ish on Friday morning. More than 20 of them have been magnitude 4.0 and higher. So there's still a lot of very intense shaking going on. But no, I haven't heard of any significant, you know, clusters of failed wells. I haven't heard any reports of failed wells. There may be, I'm assuming there's still a lot. We don't know. The borough has set up an online damage reporting system, and as of yesterday, I want to say there were about 120 total reports. Most of those were schools. Another big chunk were public, borough and state roads, and I want to say 20-ish were residential, maybe commercial, but I think mostly private residential reports of damage.
And we have a number of anecdotes of people whose wells were cloudy and then cleared and appear to be okay. And the city of Palmer's water system never was reported as being in difficulty in any way.
Right.
And Washillas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing to note about the continued aftershocks, I read one report, I think it was in the ADN, that someone detected a gas leak that emerged after one of the aftershocks. So if things are a little fragile, these stronger aftershocks mm-hmm. can create further damage. So,
certainly.
And the article that I read also in the ADN today was very interesting because it asked the question, when do aftershocks become foreshocks for the next one? and I thought it was interesting. The bottom line, finally, of the answer was when the continuing earthquakes, little ones, reach the level of the sort of background noise of these things that we experience on a regular basis, say in the period prior to the big experience on Friday, then you have finished with aftershocks. Anything that comes after that is either a continuation of that background earthquake noise or the beginning of the preparation for the next one.
Right. going to be a while.
Yeah.
I think so.
We've spent this time talking about earthquakes, and the next question is, did anything else happen this week, or is that so dominating that it blew all...
We have a new governor.
Oh, that's right. We do. I think I want to make that point because there were other things happening. We had the death of a president, former president, and George H.W. Bush. We've had the inauguration of another a new governor. And yet the earthquake seems to have dominated people's thinking and feeling, and it continues on. Of all those other things that have been happening, have any of those other reached above to grab your attention in this after week for the earthquake? Philip?
Not especially. Actually, the biggest thing other than the earthquake to happen in this area was the first Saturday of December, which means it's Wilderness Woman competition and the Talkeetna Bachelor Auction, which went on. There was discussion. Full disclosure, I'm on that board of directors. There was discussion about maybe not having those events in the wake of Friday's earthquake, but the decision was made, no, you know, the money being raised is for causes that we really want to see. You know, even if we bring in a lot less money and it's all just locals there, that's fine. But actually ended up being a very successful year for the auction and brought in almost $20,000 despite people being delayed getting up here. We still had a lot of folks coming up from Anchorage, which surprised a lot of us.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. it was a heck of a weekend. And, you know, with Wilderness Woman, I was out and about downtown pretty much all day. And even then, you know, yeah, the former President Bush had died the night before, but nobody was talking about it. Everybody was talking about the earthquake.
Got it.
Right, yeah. I think one of the things I read is, as much as we can, return to normal in our daily and our routine and our other activities. And unless there's a substantial reason, damage or something else, why not continue having the event?
Right. And that's ultimately what we decided on.
Zaz, have you noted other things that are finally breaking through the whole earthquake discussion?
I mean, the Governor Dunleavy has started his tenure with a lot of sweeping changes. There are and were a number of key positions that were empty because of the forced resignations. It's kind of an unprecedented start to a new governor's term. Would run into a public defender. Out and about, and the morale is a little shaky at some of the state agencies because the future is uncertain, which is normal. But because of the sweeping changes, I think it's a little bit more so this time around, and we're all waiting to see what's next. There are some familiar names that are popping up at the new administration, Ben Stevens among them.
Wow.
People in the Valley will remember Ben Stevens as the Valley trash guy. So it remains to be seen what the new administration holds. But there will definitely be a lot of news stories. Let's put it that way.
Right, right.
And then the second defendant in the murder of David Grunwald, his trial was delayed for some days, but started back up again a few days ago, Dominic Johnson. I couldn't cover it because both my kids were home from school. KTVA's Heather Hinton reported that Dominic Johnson's mother was subpoenaed to testify. She had also been subpoenaed to testify in the first trial, Eric Allmendinger's, and did so. And this time she didn't show up, so she had to be arrested by troopers. And so she will be testifying in her son's trial, like it or not.
And a lot of aftershocks from that event. Well, I want to thank you all for calling in or coming into the studio today. And I'd like to start by thanking Philip Manning, up in Talkeetna at KTNA.
Thanks for having me, Mike. And I did remember there was one more story that actually the press release dropped The press release dropped at 10 a.m. on Friday, so I didn't get to it for a while. But the borough has reached an agreement with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation regarding the violations of Talkeetna's sewer lagoon. And so now the plans going forward, we have an idea of what the plan is going forward and what the borough is going to have to pay for those violations. There's a story up about that on KTNA.
And thank you, Zaz, for calling in.
Anytime.
And Lee, you have one more thing, too.
I just wanted to ask Philip, our emergency alert system did not activate during the earthquake. Did yours?
I did not have the radio on, so I'd have to talk with my GM about that.
Thank you, Lee. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition. Hopefully, not a review of Earthquake 2. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.